today you have three questions. The first one comes from Rodney Itza, and she says, I have a grown-up son, Peter, who we talk a lot with about Krishna consciousness, although he calls himself a determined skeptic and materialist. And I'd like you to answer one of my questions for him. The question is the following. Why can't Krishna change the karma of those people who deserve it? And he gives an example. He says that he was driving along the road and with his car, and he avoided running over a frog. Other people would have not taken the bother. So he changed the frog's karma. Why is it that he can do something that Krishna doesn't do? So, of course, first of all, the answer is that while the act of not running over the frog is a meritable conduct, it wasn't that he necessarily changed the frog's karma. Frogs don't have karma. We see that, in general, animals are ascending from lower to higher species, and because they have no free will, therefore, they're solely and wholly directed by material nature. What Peter did do was exercise his free will, which everyone has, for the benefit of another living entity, which is different than Krishna saving someone from their karma. And Krishna does save those people who do deserve it from their karma. It's just a question of who is it that deters it. So Krishna says, Mame kam sharanam raja aham tam sarva pathebhyo. He says those people deserve to be freed from their karma who surrender to Krishna. So when people surrender to the Lord, then Krishna frees them from the results of their past activities, thus allowing them to engage in devotional service with minimum obstruction and envisage the benefit of going back home, back to Godhead. So we should always keep in mind that there are two things that govern us in this world. One is our will, or free will, a certain degree of free will, and the other is our fate, or our karma. When we surrender our will to the will of the Lord, then the Lord frees us from our karma. In fact, he does so proportionately. Jayajitamam prapadyante tamstathaiva bhajamiham. The extent that we surrender to Krishna, to that extent he frees us from karmic reaction. So Peter utilized his free will to save a frog. Now we recommend that he utilizes his free will to also save himself. A question from Vrindavani David Dasi says, how and when was the specific succession of the Bhagavad Gita originally broken, requiring it to be spoken again by Lord Krishna? In the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Sakalini Hamahata Yoga Nasta Parantapa. Here, generally, it's understood that it's the disciplic succession, not of the entirety of the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita or that of pure devotional service, but the disciplic succession of Karma Yoga, because that is what Krishna is there teaching Arjuna, was broken, and it seemed to have been broken at the time when Krishna was present 5,000 years ago. So he was, again, by speaking to Arjuna, reestablishing those teachings, those same teachings that he gave to the sun god, to Ikshvaku, came down to Manu, and so on. However, the same principle applies to all types of disciplic successions. The disciplic succession of pure devotional service, the disciplic succession of Hatha Yoga, is that when it's broken, then ultimately Krishna himself or Krishna's empowered representative comes to reestablish religious principle. Dharma samsthapana. He reestablishes the principles of religion. And the last question is from Shankarshan Das. He says, there's an article in Dandavats about the concept of Shiksha Guru, and one must only take Diksha and Shiksha from within ISKCON. I'm convinced that this notion is not supported by Shastra. Shastra is universal. We cannot apply institutional structure to it. And here's a Shastric reference to show that when finding a guru, diksha, or shiksha, one must not put institutional constraints to it. Srila Prabhupada quotes from Jiva Goswami in the Adi Lila. And this is the quote. Sri Jiva Goswami advises that one not accept a spiritual master in terms of hereditary or customary societal and ecclesiastical conventions. One should simply try to find a genuine, qualified spiritual master for actual advancement in spiritual understanding. This is true, what the quote states. However, Shankarshan Prabhu applies it incorrectly in relationship to the said article, which is also based on a GBC resolution. Srila Prabhupada was very concerned that his disciples find everything that they need for their spiritual advancement within the Krishna consciousness movement. And he warned devotees directly in letters, in personal instructions, that they should not mix intimately with his godbrothers, with Radhakrishna Babaji's, because the chances are, as per Srila Prabhupada's experience, that they would be misled and misguided from the teachings that he brought. So although this article and this resolution is within the constraints of an institutional framework, it is the instruction of our founder Acharya. And when the founder Acharya gives an instruction, then that is certainly not some kind of mundane ecclesiastical convention, but it's a rule of thumb, it's a law that all members of the society must follow. Otherwise, what is the meaning of founder Acharya? So we should embrace this instruction of Srila Prabhupada and be convinced that Yogakshema Bahami Aham, that if we follow Srila Prabhupada's instruction, then Krishna will certainly guide us from within and give us appropriate shiksha and diksha gurus. Hare Krishna.